Now, Claire Ward-Claydon, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks for taking the call, Claire. Now, you're originally from Milford, but you're currently working in Canterbury, is that right?
That's correct, yeah. We're down in Kent in the south of England.
Okay, now, going back, it seems quite some time now, the image started circulating of the three-year-old Syrian boy, Elaine Curdy, washed up on the beach at Lesbos in Greece, and I think it really focused people's minds on the reality of what some people are having to endure, many, many people are having to endure, not least children. It moved you greatly, didn't it?
Absolutely, Greg. Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, the media was bombarded with, you know, every kind of image and statistic under the sun. And, you know, I suppose you think, what is it that makes people finally go, oh, gosh, this is serious, you know? And I think that image for me definitely turned a corner, you know, and I just really was so moved by it. I felt, you know, I want to be productive. I want to do something about it. And, yeah, basically sort of said to my husband, you know, I'd like to go out there and see if I could do anything, and pretty much packed a rucksack and away I went.
And this was
and
a real...
And left him with kids.
Sorry, Claire, I was going to mention that. This was a real spur of the moment thing, and you had your own responsibilities, your hobby, as you mentioned, two children. And, you know, you also talked about how we all felt we wanted to do something, and many people did, and lots of people did. But you said, right, I'm actually going to do something. So you had to make your own personal sacrifice at that point.
Well, you know, I'm a teacher, so, I mean, obviously I'm very lucky, Greg, with the school holidays and that. So I did have, I had a week off, and Charlie, thankfully, was compliant with me leaving the kids with him for a week. So that was half the battle. And, you know, I wasn't going out with any organized group or anything like that. And that actually worked out really well for me because I wanted to maximize my time. People were incredibly generous with regards to donations. Look, just set up a crowdfunder. And, you know, every night wrote a blog and basically went into the camp and sort of had a look around, spoke to people who were there and was like, what do we need? And, you know, for example, there was, I think there was 50 women, 50 pregnant women. They're all sleeping on the floor or on the ground. And so, you know, was able to go out and buy 50 mattresses. I don't mean I was. I mean the money that people gave me. But I was able to use that money. And just to sort of go there and see, where is this money, you know, be able to tell people where the money is going. Mm. And I think people kind of got a sense of satisfaction from that, you know.
But from the logistics point of view, Claire, how did you know where to go? I mean, as you say, you didn't have the guidance or someone may say hindrance of going with an organisation. But then you sort of have to try and plan everything and you, I presume, access. So how did you... Tell us the story of that.
Well, basically, Greg, what happened was... So I pretty much booked a flight to Athens because I knew sort of from the news that there were camps on the port, obviously, where the refugees have come in from Lesbos. And obviously, if they have managed to survive the crossing and get smuggled across as far as the Greek islands, they would obviously be allowed onto the mainland. So at that point, I think Frontex was out and the boats were being stopped, but all the refugees were sitting on the port. And so I made my way to the port. And, you know, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know sort of where I was going really or what I was doing. But a friend of mine, Breed, had been out, you know, a month or so before. And she sort of gave me the heads up that if you go to whatever gate in the port, you know, I don't know if you've ever been there. Piraeus is the name of it. And it's basically where all the big cruise ships go out to the Greek islands. And, you know, it's quite stark. And it's, you know, it's a real stark contrast in that people are going with their suitcases out to have, you know, holiday of a lifetime or sailing around the Greek islands, and there's, you know, 5,000 people sitting in tents or even without tents on the pier. So I went out, sort of to answer your question, I just went out and I went into the camp. This was a camp that you're able, because it's not an official camp, I was able to just walk in and say, what do you need? What needs doing? You know, and I think you just need to roll up your sleeves and sort of go where you feel it's needed. Mm. And you could be stretched in a million different directions, and you just try to go with your gut and what you feel is the best thing to do. Sort of the mornings, there was a local restaurant. They had donated their rooftop, and the volunteers used to go up onto the rooftop every morning and make 2,000 rolls and bring them into the bring them into the camp and give them for lunch. Because again, it wasn't official, so there was it was an official camp, so they weren't necessarily guaranteed food. I think the Navy came in the evening and gave them a gave them some kind of a hot meal, but you know, it was very, it was quite slapdash, really. You know,
what was the reaction of the refugees to your gestures and the gestures of others? I mean, I presume incredibly grateful, because they're on so many levels. They can't go forward, they can't go back. They're, you know,
complete limbo. Yeah. I mean, you know, you sort of, for the week, you know, you work hard, you do what you can, and anything you give them, they're so grateful. And but there's some, and you know, you obviously feel good about that, but then there's something terrible about that as well, and that you know, you can be put up on such a pedestal for doing so little and giving them so little, you know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think they really crave some semblance of normality. You know, one of the tents, I mean, I sort of just used to go around the tents, sort of, knocking on the door,
I get you, making them know that you're there.
And they just love to sit and chat. They just want to sit and have the crack and whatever. And even if there's the language barrier, I mean, there was a real elaborate game of charades going on every night, really, sort of give us a clue. But, you know, I always took a pen and paper with me, and we were drawing. It was like Pictionary every night, trying to communicate. We would sit and sort of exchange photos on our smartphones and, you know, show our families and our kids and that type of thing. And,
Did you get an insight as to, you know, why... How bad things were. I mean, they want to stay at home, the overwhelming majority of them. They want their feet on terra firma. Yes. That they would be prepared to say, you know, it's probably safer for me to get into this boat with my children. And we know how caring we are of our children, and these people are the exact same. Mm-hmm. How bad things must be for them to undertake that journey and not knowing what would ever come of it if they survived even.
Yeah. I mean, it's just life or death, that's it. You know, if you see the photographs of where they've come from, this is the thing that really struck me as well, Greg, is, you know, their houses were beautiful, you know, their clothes, the women, you know, the Arabic women, you know, take such pride in themselves, their makeup, their clothes, you know, their feasts for Eid and stuff like that, their amazing sort of food laid out, and, you know, the pictures they show you, and then they show you a picture of it bombed, you know, and it's just grab your kids and go, whatever, if your kids have survived, you know, that type of thing. And so I do think it's a huge fall for them to come from, really, to come from the kind of lives that we have, you know, our cars and our, you know, celebrations and our
jobs,
clothes,
homes,
and,
you know, birthdays you look forward to celebrating.
Yeah, and I mean, there's varying stories on that, either sort of bombs, or particularly all of those coming from Aleppo and that. But, you know, there's two guys who I'm still in touch with most days. One of them, he worked for an American company. He was taken in and told because he worked for an American company, he would be killed because he wasn't a true Muslim, that type of thing. And he was blacklisted by Al-Qaeda, and he was smuggled out and phoned his parents. He's only 22. Phoned his parents from Turkey to say, you know, he can never ever go back. He will never see his family again. And that's tough at 22. And he's stuck in Greece, you know. A law student on his way to college one day stopped at traffic lights. And again, I think, gosh, I didn't have a car when I was in college, not till long afterwards. You know, these are sort of, they were living high end, and stopped at traffic lights and dragged out by ISIS. And, you know, sort of tortured, and he was put in jail for several months, where really the stories complete, they echo off the Holocaust, the stories of torture.
Yeah.
So all sorts of reasons for leaving, but very valid, really.
And, you know, I think it was triggered by the picture. You know, there were thousands of people offering spare rooms, and there was this big movement, and it was a beautiful thing, but then it all seemed to go away. I wonder what changed. Was there a PR sort of war going on, or?
Well, not to sort of get into the rhetoric of sort of the government and the media and opening and closing borders and stuff like that there. I think, you know, it's not headlines anymore. And I think as well, because the boats aren't coming across the Med anymore, because obviously Frontex are out there and they can't get past that. So the boats aren't coming in. So there's not that daily sort of, there's not the intake of refugees now onto mainland Europe. They're stuck. They're completely stuck in limbo wherever they are now. And I think, therefore, it's not, you know, these kids aren't falling off boats and drowning. They might maybe be coming from Africa, you know, whatever, but whereas, you know, there was 2,500 drowned there or more sort of in the last year.
And that's an astonishing number. How many classrooms is that, you know?
Oh, my goodness.
But the thing is, you see, this is what's so confusing about humanity, in that we see the worst of humanity in this situation, and then we see the best of humanity in the likes of yourself and others that roll their sleeves up and want to help and care. It's a funny old world, isn't it?
I think so, but, you know, it's easy for me, or it's easy for anybody at home to sort of, you know, what's a week, or, you know, what is it to donate 20 quid or this, that, and the other, you know, and people feel they're being productive. I mean, I think the real heroes, you know, in the face of adversity, you see incredible acts of bravery and kindness within the refugees themselves,
yeah.
You know. For example, I went into one of the tents one night, and there was a young mother there, and she didn't have any, I think from the trauma of the journey, she couldn't breastfeed anymore, and she had a young baby, and she didn't have a kettle to warm the milk, the formula. And so I had this money that people had kindly donated, and I went out, and I actually bought maybe 20 kettles and went round and gave them to, you know, anyone who had a baby, basically. And that night, myself and a couple other volunteers came around, and we went into the tent, and she insisted on making tea for everybody. They gave us all oranges, and you had to, that normality, that just a group of girls sitting around and having a laugh, and, you know, the kids trying to plait your hair, and they crave that kind of normality, and they're so generous. Like, they won't take anything without sort of trying to give you something back. One of the refugees gave me her ring, and I was insisting on that, you know, I so didn't want to take it, but
it got to the point that if you didn't, it's insulting, because they want it to be a two-way street.
For sure, yeah. Of course they do, and I understand that.
Now, you went and recorded a song as well, Claire. Well, can I hear it, so there's no point pretending you didn't.
There's nowhere to go with that. That I'd actually written that song whenever they were bombing, bombing in, went into Iraq.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were doing the huge, particularly around London and that, and huge protests with Not In My Name.
Yeah.
And then they were doing the exact same thing for Syria. And that's the bombing was Not In My Name, you know. That's kind of what it was heard from, yeah.
Right, so we're going to play out with that, Claire. Are you still doing the crowdfunding, or...?
What I'm doing, Greg, is I've just been given a really fantastic gift by Skull Isaac, and my cousin Helen Ginty works there, and the school has given me a framed Celtic top from when Celtic won the treble. I'm sounding like I know what I'm talking
about.
You're
doing a good job.
I don't really, I'm sure out there, I've been told that it's very valuable.
Very sought after,
Very sought after. So, you know, I'm just going to, what I'm doing is I've made out sort of a load of cards, and I'm distributing them at home. I'm hoping to sort of next week. And I suppose and obviously the jersey is up for auction. Or sorry, up for raffle. So I suppose I'm just appealing to see if anybody would like to take a card. There's sort of €2 for a line and that type of thing. There's a couple of other prizes. If there's any schools or businesses or shops or petrol stations, anybody who would like to take a card and fill it up, or, you know, businesses and that, coming up to Christmas. And I'm going to have a wee raffle after Christmas for that.
Brilliant.
And it's just, I've also been asked to go into a couple of schools and do... sort of, it's just to raise awareness.
This is in Donegal, like Claire, isn't it? Yeah.
In Donegal. Yeah. I'm also doing it over here in Canterbury. But, and that's, and just if anybody did want to contribute, the thing is as well, a lot of people say, well, I wouldn't know what to do. There's things like one of the guys, for example, he's just been given asylum after sort of a year and a half, and he's going to Lithuania, and he's just like, oh gosh, I don't even know how to speak that language. So what I'm trying to do now is I'm collecting old tablets or old, you know, forms of media that they can maybe learn a language from and take it out. I'm hoping to go out again in March. And if anybody has anything like that, or would like to do a church gate collection, anything like that would help, that would be really great.
So where people, you mentioned a blog, so you must have a website, or is it on Facebook, Claire? How can people best sort of interact with you or and find out more info?
I guess they could get me on Claire Ward on Facebook.
Okay.
And or else maybe through yourself. I don't know.
No problem. We have the info.
I could leave my contact details with you, email and phone and stuff like that.
Super.
There, if they wanted to get in touch.
Claire, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and it's great
Thank
to
you
get
so
that
much,
insight.
Greg.
You know, it feels really real, and I really appreciate that. And we're going to play out with your song, "Not in My Name." Thank you, Claire.
Thanks so much, Greg. Great to talk to you.